We are the Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of media from the Reynolds Media Lab. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. Co-hosting with me today is my fellow Reynolds Sandbox reporter and RSJ grad student, Scott King. Today, we are with Taylor Johnson. She's the editor of the Nevada Sagebrush, a student-run newspaper based out of Reno. Taylor, thank you for joining us. To get us started, how did you get into journalism, and how and why did you decide to go towards the print route?
When I was coming to the university, I actually was inspired by the 2016 election. It bothered me that a lot of media outlets were called fake news, even if it wasn't, just because they didn't like the truth of it. And because of that, because of the Renaissance, I was inspired to get into it. I participated in Nevada Fit, JFit, when I met Olivia Alley, the current editor-in-chief, who told me I should get involved with the Nevada Sagebrush, and I started staff writing from there, and it just grew into a love and a passion.
And you're the news editor. What does your role look like?
So my role as news editor is to pretty much run the first two pages of the Sagebrush, mainly CP. I manage my staff writers, and I collaborate with other sections if there's like a huge story coming up. Pretty much, and edit their stories. So it's kind of like a balance of a lot of things.
What kind of issues are you covering?
My beat, as Olivia says, is like white supremacy on campus. I also like to focus on like diversity issues and construction, since there's a lot of that happening.
We wanted to talk to you about your article. It's titled "White Supremacy Persists at UNR 2 Years After Charlottesville," and that covered earlier in the semester. There were posters and flyers posted around campus by a white supremacist group, and you also talked to students how they were feeling. Will you tell us about your experience writing that story?
So this was probably one of the hardest stories I've ever written. It was a lot of managing people's time and making sure my own biases didn't come out in the story. It also was interesting interviewing the president of the American Identity Movement, because typically in articles you don't read that perspective, but I thought it was important for people to show like what their tactics are. After the article came out, the issue became, instead of like just writing the story and managing everything, it became an issue of like publicity. People knew my name, and it kind of bothered me because I wasn't used to that. If there was a Bernie Sanders, they're like tabling right now. When I just mentioned like, oh yeah, my name is Taylor Johnson, because they asked for it, they're like, are you the one who wrote the article? I was like, yeah. It was kind of awkward at first. Eventually, things died down. On social media, I'm still not very liked from both sides, but eventually you just know how to manage it.
Why do you think that is, that you may have, you know, gotten different reactions? Do you think it's because you covered a kind of a hot topic or a divisive topic like this?
I think so. Many of the criticism I got was from people who believed that I gave them a platform. And writing the story, like, I had issues with that, because obviously you don't want to give a platform to white supremacists. However, like I said, it's important to make sure that people know what their marketing tactics are and what they're trying to do at college campuses. It isn't like, oh, look at these people, I'm so great for getting these people. It's just getting that perspective in so people know. And because I did that and other news outlets didn't, they felt a kind of way about it. As for the far right, of course they just don't like anything typically with journalism unless it's praising them. So
how do you think kind of the environment on campus changed or shifted at all after that article was released to where we are today, a couple months down the road?
I know that ASUN has recently passed a bill in support of stopping like white supremacy on campus. That's the only like visible thing I've seen, but culturally I know people are more aware about it, which is the whole goal.
I wanted to touch on something you brought up a little bit earlier. When you were writing the story, you kind of tried to not put your own biases in that. How did you, like, navigate through that?
So, as a Black woman, obviously you would just want to go to town, like, about these people. But I knew that I couldn't do that if I wanted to properly do this. I tried to use my experience before with other stories I've did related to diversity, and I just tried to use that knowledge and worked with Olivia Ali to make sure that if anything popped up, that immediately we delete it or whatnot. It was just paragraph by paragraph, sentence by sentence to make sure.
Of course, and we wanted to ask you too. So Mark Johnson, who has since announced that he is stepping down, which we can unpack later, but he sent your story to the whole school. How did you feel about that?
It was a bittersweet moment for me because it is kind of cool, I'm not going to lie, for the president of the university's praiser article. But at the same time, it could have put me at risk. Putting out this article, I didn't know whether these groups were going to come after me. I made jokes all the time, like, oh, I'm going to get hate crimes. But it was me trying to desensitize the fact that that might happen. And once he did that and my name became out there, it was stressful, to say the least, because I didn't even find out from Mark Johnson himself. I found out in that email. So I just had an issue with that, really.
New at 4 o'clock, Mark Johnson will no longer be the president of the University of Nevada at the end of this school year. The university made the announcement earlier today, saying Johnson will transition to a faculty position for the College of Business starting in June of 2020. At Johnson said in a statement today, quote, serving as the president of the University of Nevada, Reno has been the responsibility of a lifetime for me. I am extremely proud of where our university is today, end quote.
On the topic of him stepping down, what do you guys think about that?
Actually, we were expecting it. Just looking at how past presidents have been, like their terms and whatnot, it was like around the same time when he announced like he was stepping down. I was surprised though he did not announce that at his State of the University speech, because that's where we were expecting him to say something. But on Halloween, we rushed to break the story, and we broke it before Mark Johnson broke it, so that was great.
Oh my gosh, wow. And once again, this is the Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of media. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck, reporting with Scott King, and we are now segmenting to our time traveling segment. Taylor, describe your perfect future. What does 10 to 20 years down the road look like for you and for yourself, society, and media?
So for myself, I hopefully will become a communication specialist for an international body. It's important for me after my experiences undergrad that people understand the value of the First Amendment, free speech, and I want to make sure that other countries, other places continue to follow those rules. As for media, I hope it'll continue the advocacy of the First Amendment and that other organizations and groups won't continue to condemn it, even if it's the truth.
How do you feel your experiences already in your first 2 years at UNR prepared you to take on that role in the future?
It's actually, with the Sagebrush, it's prepared me a lot. I understand like what a newsroom is. I know editors and that relationship. I've been plagiarized before. Breaking news, of course. And also like the publicity sort of thing. So I have gone through quite a bit in my undergrad, but I know there's still a ways to go. With journalism, you can't just like predict what's gonna happen, since it's such a like this unknowing field.
So your work has been plagiarized?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, will you tell us about that?
So last year, I wrote a story about PAC Transit and like their like shifts for the next year. And I remember I got a message from Madeline Perdue saying, hey, do you have an interview with Michelle Horton. She was the director of like transportation here. And I was like, yeah, why? And she said that I won't say which one, but a channel plagiarized one of my pieces and posted it. So it became a sort of like battle between us and them, like seeing if they can either give us credit, change the article, or just delete it for right now and just have all that information gone. Unfortunately, they did apologize, but some of the information still is my information. But since we are a student newspaper, it's not like we have a lot of power, unfortunately.
I wanted to ask you, too, did you cover Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA's visit?
I did.
I was told that it was kind of like this collaborative effort where everyone in the Sagebrush kind of took a part and covered it together. What was your experience like?
I was down with the counter-protest.
No war! No KKK! No TPUSA! No war! No KKK! No TPUSA!
It at first was a little crazy because I just remember two men fighting right in front of me and me trying to like navigate through and debating whether or not I should talk to them or not. I ended up not talking to them since people started to like pull them apart because it was getting bad. But I wanted to talk to the students. And like when I've reported on like diversity related issues, protests, whatnot, I like to focus on the students because it to me, students are like the spirit like of this university. They have a lot of power even if they don't see it. And I love hearing their experiences and their voice, especially like when reporting.
What's one student story you've heard that's touched you the most?
One student story was, I forgot her name, but she was one of like the leaders doing the protest. She graduated from the university, I believe, in a few years ago, but she told me about a story when she was protesting Columbus Day.
Today, police investigating this terrifying moment at a Columbus Day protest. In Reno, Nevada, a truck plowing through a group of activists, reportedly hitting at least five people.
Someone ran over her. A student at the university ran over her. And he was not charged and was not kicked out of the university. And she had to like deal with that until she graduated.
That's so hard to hear these stories, and they just stick with us for a long time. I actually saw your recent article and I wanted to ask you about it. If you're choosing dark makeup, you're choosing blackface. It's an opinion piece where you just talked about people using darker makeup to appear African American, and it's essentially blackface and racist. Will you elaborate on that and why you found it important to make that distinction, and then also like what blackfaiting is?
So, it was important since Halloween, of course, was at the time coming up, and a lot of times people believe that a funny costume is someone's race or someone's like culture and whatnot. But my issue wasn't so much them. Yeah, they're ignorant, but at least it's for one day. My issue was a lot of the Instagram like stars and whatnot, just media influencers, appearing to be darker in order to get more clout, essentially. That's what blackbaiting is. So I wanted to write this article just to show the light on that. So people, instead of focusing on, oh, these Halloween people, to show that everyday sort of racism that, like, typically if you're not on, like, Instagram or in, like, Twitter and whatnot a lot, you won't typically see.
Speaking of which, kind of like moving out past Halloween, these people who are doing it like, I would say like every day, I wanted to ask, what about, do you have an opinion on Ariana Grande? We saw her, we printed out pictures if you would like to see, but we first kind of exposed to her in the Nickelodeon show Victorious, and to now, I have seen that she does use darker makeup and her lips have like appeared larger. What are your thoughts on that?
I think she is a blackfaiter, especially since her music has gone towards more of the R&B route than pop, at least recently. I think it's just because of beauty standards, because unfortunately you like what you can't have, and it's like that for the black community and like everyone else. My issue, though, is at least with Black women, we are told that we're ugly, we aren't, like, we don't have the European-esque, like, features, so therefore we are this. Or with, like, media influencers, like, making their lips bigger, making their hair curly, darkening their skin to make it appear that they are either Black or racially ambiguous, it just shows, like, the double standard of, like, beauty. And it's an issue, and by bringing more awareness to it, essentially, will be more help than bad, you know?
Yeah, I really like that story, so thanks for reporting on that.
Thank you.
And once again, this is the Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of media, and we are talking to Taylor, the news editor of the Sagebrush, about different stories you've covered and people you've talked to. We are now turning into our random fact segment. What is the most random or, like, interesting story you've covered?
It's a good question. I have to think about that for a second. I think it isn't so much, like, random and whatnot, but it's one of the stories that I felt like my heart was at. I reported on the transgender community on campus last year, I believe in the spring, and hearing the students' like experiences and voice and the things they dealt with on campus, it was heartbreaking. And I hope that other like groups of minorities, not just race, they will get coverage by either the Reynolds School or just students in general who want to share their stories to help better the university.
Yeah. What were some of the things that they were saying, how they felt on campus?
They were telling me how they were misgendered by the university, how they were dealing with, like, gender dysphoria, how they were being deadnamed by emails, someone being referred to their a name that they don't go by, that typically is, like, their birth name. It can be very, very, very affecting to that person because it's just a reminder of someone who they aren't anymore, and it could be triggering for them. And then gender dysphoria, although I will say I am not an expert at this, from my understanding it is a mental condition where it's just severe, like, either depression, anxiety and whatnot, because they don't feel like they fit into the sort of gender, sort of, like, stereotype of what, like, a girl, a boy, etc. should be like.
Thanks for breaking that down for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, too, in your opinion, why are student-run news publications important in our community?
So student-run media, like, publications and stuff, they need more attention and awareness because this is how students learn to get into the industry. This is, like, I've learned more in the Sagebrush, I think, than I've learned in, like, my RSJ classes so far. And by getting these students the experience now, especially the freshman year of, like, college, like, that you can't get that, like, anywhere else. In the field, in the experience is so much better than just being lectured at, because you're really retaining that information rather than just, oh, it's a class, whatever.
If you were to give a sales pitch on why people should fund student newsrooms, what would you like to say?
If you want to fund the future of media, if you want to make sure that you are getting the future Pulitzer Prize winners, that you are getting these PR people, graphic designers, the best of the best, you need to fund student media.
Yes. And how was your experience in the Reynolds Hot Box?
My experience is great. This is probably the first podcast I've been on, so it's, like, always, like, such, like, fun, like, experiences and whatnot.
Thanks for coming in today, Taylor.
Thank you for inviting me.